The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
This is Jobsolete, where we talk about jobs that are long gone. And the job we're talking about in this episode is intense, so fair warning, might not be for the faint of heart. Today, we're looking at the professional public executioner.
Off with their heads!
A sword, a stick, and a gallows.
Did one person really kill 3,000 people?
Everyone in this job is related.
If you can get away, you survive.
Huge, bloodthirsty crowds.
Social outcasts, but wealthy.
Killing in party outfits.
So, Helen, what do you know about killing people?
Well, I watched all of Game of Thrones. As Matt, I repeatedly bring up Game of Thrones, and there is a lot of killing people that goes on in Game of Thrones. Yeah, there was a lot of just chopping heads off with swords.
And axes.
Yeah.
Hey, I've been watching it. I think I'm up to episode 7 now.
Oh. I'm so proud of you. And I hope that it was me peer pressuring you. I do.
If that's all it was. Yeah. This is a fascinating one to me. I went down a few rabbit holes researching because I was like, oh, what about today? And I know typically we don't talk about today until the end of the show, but I figured it'd be good to frame it this way because this is heavy stuff and it still happens.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, it's not completely jobsolete. It's very rare. There are probably only a handful of people today that do this job, but it still exists.
Yeah, and we're talking about... So first of all, the job is executioner, and sometimes they're just professional executioner. That's the official name. But it used to be called a hangman. It also used to be known as a headsman because typically the way that they killed people was hanging them or chopping off their head.
Yikes. Oof. Yikes.
So yeah, the person who was the official who carried out the sentence of capital punishment, and it was the government that was the one who carried it out. It's not just like some random dude going around killing people. Also, it was in public, and so you would have an audience that, and often a very large audience, like a lot of people showed up to watch these things. But today, yeah, today it's more low key. In fact, it's not something that we really want the public to see necessarily. One more thing to bring up, actually, is the way we kill people who are sentenced to death by the state today is most commonly lethal injection. But also electrocution is still something that's sometimes used. And also even firing squad or a single shot to the head in some countries.
Whoa.
The idea is, yeah, that is whoa. But at the same time, you're trying to make it as quick as possible and as painless as possible to be as humane as possible. So we're very careful about it today. It's like one of those things like we have to do it. People still want it. But how can we do it where it's not, oh, wow, like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, bloody and like a spectacle. Yeah.
But what we're talking about on the show today, the reason why I brought all this up is because the job was definitely about the spectacle. And we're talking about the obsolete occupation of public executioner.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I feel like in today's world, especially in the United States, like, you don't know who these people are, the public executioners. They probably don't want to be known. It's not, the sentences are not carried out in public. You're not in like a town square with a big hanging gallows or anything like that. So it's all done hush. And back in the day, it wasn't like that. It was like a show.
Absolutely. But also, they did so much more than just kill people, as you said in the intro. So let's, I think it's time to hop into the time machine, maybe?
The time machine. Pew, 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 pew.
So the 1600s was the heyday. This is when it was more common for this to be like an event that everybody showed up to. And it was also like seen as something that was like socially acceptable. It was before this, but it wasn't as formalized. So it was formal, but also we're talking sometimes thousands would show up to watch these executions. Yeah. And we're not just talking about one particular place. We're talking about all over the world you saw this. But our expert focuses on France.
So we spoke with Paul Friedland. He's a professor of history at Cornell and author of Seeing Justice Done, The Age of Spectacular Capital Punishment in France.
Friedland is a historian of France, so much of what he will be referring to happened there. But he also pointed us to when the heyday was for the executioner, which often was in France.
If crime becomes something that is all about intentions and malice aforethought, then punishment becomes something that is about deterring crime, dissuading people from having those kind of evil thoughts and going through with it. So the idea is you basically stage these elaborate spectacles to teach people a lesson and to prevent crime. So the execution is meant to symbolize the crime itself and teach people, don't do this. So I'll just give you a couple of examples of the kinds of punishments that are cropping up right at the time they found the office of public executioner. So one of these is, if you counterfeit, the usual crime for that is boiling alive. If you commit heresy or sodomy or bestiality, they burn you alive because it's meant to recall the sort of flames of illicit passion that turns you toward the evil side. Highway robbery, they break you on the wheel, which is meant to symbolize the sort of the king's road. And they actually tie you up on this wheel and beat you up with an iron bar and then leave you to die. And all of these spectacles are incredibly elaborate. And you can't just have some average Joe boiling people alive. You need a professional. And that's why they found the office of public executioner and why everybody wants one by basically the end of the 13th century.
Oh, so macabre. These horrible ways to die. I guess the logic of it makes sense. If you're using these public executions as deterrence, you want it to be a horrible death. So people are like, ugh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to risk getting caught and having that happen to me. So I guess I won't do the crime.
We're talking the Middle Ages here, when we start to see a more formal process where, like, before the 1200s, it was basically like, of course, the state government would like sentence people to death and then sentence people to be tortured and all this. But it wouldn't happen in such a way where like everybody would know when and where and how, and you're all invited. And capital punishment is as old as humans, as old as societies. It's not the only way they punished. I think people assume that, oh, that it used to be that every punishment was death. But no, there was like, you could be banished. You could be shunned.
You could have your hand cut off. That's a good old standard.
Ooh. Yeah.
Chop your hand off.
Yeah. You still need to work.
I wonder if this all makes me think that there's something about society, especially that society like medieval times in Europe, where there was like a thirst for gruesome violence. There's something in human nature that makes us watch Game of Thrones and makes us watch these violent TV shows where everybody gets killed and maimed, and the horror movie genre, like the gory, bloody horror show genre of movies is so popular, and there's something about human nature that wants to see that. But they didn't have Game of Thrones, and they didn't have Saw movies back in the day, so it's like they had to do it for real.
Yeah, they had gladiators in ancient Rome. I think this is something that kind of continued that. And because in ancient Rome, oftentimes it was criminals who were the ones who were forced to fight off the lion or fight off whoever. But I think the main thing is they wanted it to be something that scared the crap out of people. Like, you could be next, so don't even think about it, type of deal. Mm-hmm. Do you think you could be a public executioner?
Oh,
you think
no.
You have what it takes?
Absolutely, 100% not. As much as I love Game of Thrones, I am super squeamish. I don't even
you
eat
even
red...
be a nurse, could you?
Yeah, no, I don't even eat red meat because of my squeamishness. So forget having to, like, hack up humans. No. I think that you have to be a certain kind of person to have this job, like a really strong stomach and a detachment to humanity a little bit. You have to be, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that's absolutely true, and often a position that people did not want. And so who were stuck with it were people that were like at the margins of society. This is similar to that Sin Eater episode. But yeah, it was different around the world. The qualifications were different around the world. Generally, though, it was people that were undesirable, like at the bottom of the hierarchy.
That makes sense. So it's not really a job that anybody really wants to do, or nobody's like a little kid being like, I want to grow up to become a public executioner. But you're forced into the job because of desperation. You're either desperate for money, you're like socially an outcast, so you're pushed into doing this job.
It's not like you can apply to become one, a separate race of people, a kind of a race of outcasts, and their daughters would really only marry other executioners or into other executioner families because nobody else would want anything to do with them. And so all of the executioners are pretty much related to each other. Urban legends that are told about, like one story is about a guy who goes to an inn and meets this really personable man sitting at the bar, and they share drinks and they stay up until all hours talking. And only the next day does he realize that the other guy had been an executioner and everybody else had been keeping their distance. And one of the worst things you could do is not only be caught in the company of an executioner, but actually dine with them. Another urban legend is about somebody falling in love with a beautiful woman, only to find out that it was the daughter of the executioner. And you can't marry the daughter of the executioner without becoming an executioner yourself.
That is so interesting that they all were related to each other.
Yeah.
It's like, that's, oh, there's something like morbidly sad about that. Like, honey, how was work? Dad, how was work? Same, heads rolling.
Similar to royalty. They're all probably getting weird diseases too because of the intermarrying.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
But yeah, you were born into it often in most societies around the world during the heyday, at least. And I did look up in particular, the Ottoman Empire was fascinating to me. Only the Romani people could be executioners in the Ottoman Empire.
Oh, gypsies, right?
They're
called gypsies today.
They couldn't even share graveyards after they died with the general public. They had no inscriptions on their tombstones after they died. So very sad. Yeah.
That makes me really sad. These horrible jobs where you have to chop up people and torture people to death. And then after all that, you can't even be buried in a proper grave. Like, you don't even have respect in death.
Another interesting thing about the Ottoman Empire, though, is they had like a weird tradition of if you could escape the executioner, then you could maybe survive.
Meaning if you can somehow get away from the executioner, if you could get out of your wrist shackles and then just run for your life and the executioner can't catch you, guess what? You're free.
Yeah, no, there are documented instances of this. And in some areas, it became more formal. They're like, okay, you got to at least give them a chance to escape. And if they can't escape, then okay, you can kill them. But yeah, so anyway, it's a worldwide trend that they were forced into it. They were born into it and they were cut off from the rest of society because they're like, oh, who wants to be with them?
You are literally born into it. And there are a bunch of examples of actual baby executioners, people whose father die when they're at an early age. So there's an example of Jean-Baptiste François Carlier, who becomes the official executioner of the town of Pontoise at the age of 1 year old in 1741. Obviously, they don't have babies going out killing people. They've got a regent taking care of his responsibilities until he becomes a certain age.
That is bonkers that you... a one-year-old executioner who's got like a stand-in until he gets old enough to hold up the axe. Oh, gosh, that's crazy. That's great. Can you imagine these family reunions? Like, oh, gosh, horrible. This is horrible conversations happening at the old executioner family reunion.
Now, it seems, so far, it would seem that the public executioner is one of the worst jobs ever. Why would you ever want to do it? They're outcasts, yada, yada. But they were also some of the best paid.
They were incredibly well compensated for the time. These were fairly wealthy people. And they were comparatively well educated. Many of them were literate and could read and sign their names. Some of the salary came as a kind of per piece thing, per execution. In the provinces, it tended to pay a little bit less. In capital cities, it could be really lucrative.
The reason why they were well paid is because they were paid for all this other stuff on top of the actual executions. And it was basically like revenue sharing type of deal. Like everything in the market, they got a portion of the profits, which I don't know why. I couldn't find out why that was, but it seems to be pretty...
It makes sense. If you're an employee of the state today, you get paid by taxes, right? That's how you get paid. Mm-hmm. So it kind of makes sense that back then, this is like the way of taxing everybody in the community to then pay towards you, your job, which is essential to the community.
That actually makes a lot of sense now that you say it, put it that way. We've already been talking about the skills a little bit here, but let's continue with the skills because they were quite skilled, actually. And I know this is weird, but you got to make sure that you quickly kill them. That's a skill that there are stories where if they didn't kill them immediately, then not only could they maybe get away, like the person they're supposed to kill, but the public might just take them away saying, you didn't do the job, so they're free now.
You'd have your sharp sword. You'd have your various implements for the gallows. They were in charge of taking care of all the equipment. You've got your torturing equipment too. And in France, at least, the executioner was in charge of torturing, which was a sort of legal procedure to try to get somebody to confess or give up their accomplices. it's not quite a tool, but one of the sort of interesting things about executioners was the outfits that they were required to wear, because it was really important to people that they be recognizable from a distance, that they couldn't be confused with normal people. So every different town had a different requirement for the executioner. So in some places, it was a special cloak of a particular color. In other places, they always had to wear the insignia of the gallows. In some places, they had to wear party-colored clothing, meaning like one pant leg would be red and one would be yellow to signify that they were not like other people. But there are all these, as you go through the archives and read about this, there's this constant game between the executioners and the local officials trying to outsmart each other, because the executioner doesn't want to be recognized everywhere because people would throw stuff at him or not allow him to sit in particular places. And in some places, they also had to carry like a large stick, which as time went on would get bigger and bigger as people became more anxious about being able to recognize the executioner so they wouldn't by mistake come anywhere near them.
Oh my gosh, this is so sad and twisted. These poor people had to wear outfits so everybody could shun them on a daily basis. Oh man, even on my day off, I can't just go to Starbucks and get a coffee because I'm wearing these party-colored clothes. Pick me out from a distance and they're certainly not going to let me into the Starbucks for a coffee. They're like, hey, no executioners in here, bro.
People were not supposed to like them at all. And I think that's part of the whole like spectacle of it. So
you're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
There were no typical days for a public executioner because these were big days. Dr. Friedland's going to talk about the biggest public execution of all time.
But the biggest execution, the sort of the apogee of payday of executions would be the execution of Damiens in 1757. And that was just, it was the first drawing and quartering in 150 years. So everybody wanted to see it. And people bought up windows at exorbitant prices. They even tore off the roofs of the houses nearby so they could construct viewing platforms. And there must have been hundreds of thousands of people who showed up to watch that one.
See, that really makes me think there's like a segment of every human population that is drawn to gore and violence. That's why in today's era, these gore porn movies are so popular, there's a portion of our population that is drawn to that and wants to see blood and guts and gore. For a drawing and quartering in 17 whatever to draw hundreds of thousands of people, and they're like paying for window space and they're constructing viewing platforms, like they're like, oh, it's a drawing and quartering, it's so gruesome, we gotta watch it.
Hundreds of thousands of people, though, I can't wrap my head around that very well, like thinking about 1757 in France. But another part of a typical day for these events was when the executioner first got there, like we hinted at earlier, they had the right to seize a certain percentage of all goods sold in the public marketplace, or at least seize the profits from that. And again, this was actually the bulk of their income and one reason why they were so wealthy. The first thing they did when they got there was like, all right, guys, pay up. Okay, before we get this party started, pay tributes, or what kind of goods you got in the marketplace for me today?
Hundreds and sometimes thousands of people would flock, and the execution was usually right by the market. So just when things were getting busy, the executioner and their families would show up at the market, and then they would fan out to take their due from each of the different people. But because all of these people were outcasts and basically untouchables, nobody wanted them anywhere near what they were selling, particularly if it was food, because their touch would contaminate what was for sale. So they would have to take everything with a tin spoon rather than touching things directly. And they would mark the people who they had already taken stuff from with chalk. And as you read through the archives, people are just very upset about even being touched by a piece of chalk that the executioner is holding, because that's how infamous they are. But they would make a huge amount of money off of this stuff, because it's basically a percentage of all goods sold in the public marketplace. So
I just can't get over how, like, they can have whatever they want. These executioners can go around and take whatever they want, but they can't even grab it with their own hands. They have to use a spoon to get it. And even just marking the people with chalk, which I'm assuming they did on their arm or something, or maybe their forehead, I don't know.
And the people are like, speculate. Ew, get that chalk away from me. Ew, the executioner touched me. Gross.
It's now time for our notable person. I will say that this person, this executioner, he famously killed Marie Antoinette, and he killed King Louis the 16th.
Whoa.
This was during the French Revolution, a time of lots of executions.
Probably the most famous executioner is Charles-Henri Saint-Saëns, who was from a long line of executioners. And he was the executioner during the French Revolution. He is the guy who executed Louis the 16th, Marie Antoinette, all of the French revolutionary politicians who were killed by guillotine. And he probably presided over the execution of 2,000 or 3,000 people over the length of his tenure. He served the king. He served every single regime. It was execution, the Napoleonic regime, every single political regime. He was the executioner.
Whoa. I can't even imagine seeing that guy's resume. Yeah, I've killed 3,000 people, including the king and the queen. What's up? What's up?
Yeah, a bunch of other famous people during the French Revolution. Towards the end of his career, the guillotine is the most common way of killing, and that actually marks the beginning of the end of the public executioner.
And it seems like it's going to be a big improvement because it takes all the guesswork out. But what it basically does is industrialize the profession. So you don't really need anybody who is skilled. All you need is somebody who can pull the cord. But it takes a while for the profession to disappear. At first, in 1793, they probably had a couple thousand executioners in France, because almost every town, every major town in the northern two-thirds of the country would have had an executioner. And in 1793, they decide they're only going to need one executioner for each of France's 83 departments. One executioner and one guillotine. So you go from a few thousand to 83 in 1793. And all the other 1,000 executioners, some of them end up taking jobs in the South where there hadn't been an official executioner, but a lot of them end up in poverty. And if you go to the archives, you can see all these actually very touching letters that they wrote to administrators, basically saying, I'm an outcast. It's not like I can get a job. I can't show up at the local tavern and asked to be a bartender. I cannot support myself or my family. Or even those who got the job and moved to the South were treated horribly, even worse than they'd been treated in the North. And people threw stuff at them and screamed at them. And one guy, I remember, wrote to the officials, "I cry myself to sleep every night." I mean, they're actually really touching. You feel sorry for these guys.
Wow, that is typical, right? This job went away because of automation and mechanization. It's very sad what he was saying, that they were writing these tearful letters because they couldn't support themselves. But I think there was a lot of personal tragedy with this job going away. But I think probably as society moving forward, it was probably a good thing that this job went away, because even the guillotine is a more humane way of killing someone than you hoping someone hacks your head off in the first swing.
There's a lot going on here, actually, more than technology, I think. Wouldn't you say?
I definitely think so. I think, like I said earlier, it's the stomach for it. It went down. And also, I think because we do have movies now and TV shows and this gory porn thing, that you don't really need to do it in real life to get that, to scratch that itch for humanity. So you can take some chocolate syrup and some film and pretend to kill someone on film and watch that and get that violent streak out. But you don't need to do it in real life. So I think the stomach for it went down.
It is kind of a form of escapism, like for entertainment. But what's interesting to me, the fact that the French government also at the same time, the camera is in there, they snuck the camera in there to film it, and then they're distributing the film. The French government is embarrassed by that. And like we said at the beginning of this episode, today, it's still pretty half and half in terms of how many people are still okay with the death penalty. About half of the population in most societies is okay with it. But even those who are okay with it, they don't want to see it. They just want you to just
do it quietly and keep it out of sight.
But again, it's a lethal injection, electrocution. You're just trying to kill them as humanely as possible. So why would you need a public executioner? That doesn't make sense today. All right. So final thoughts on the legacy?
I think this was one of the most complicated and sad jobs that we've covered in this series. I didn't know how tragic the job was. And so in that sense, I'm really glad that the job has essentially gone away, especially the public spectacle of it. And I'm curious to see if we did make public executions, modern public executions, more public, if we actually televised actual public executions, if the job would go away entirely, because people really wouldn't have a stomach for it.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Yeah. Something I thought of was this job created so much suffering, yet the ones who performed the job constantly suffered. I would also agree that this job going away was a win-win, because you had less suffering, both by the person doing it and whoever they were doing it to.
Jobsolete is produced for iHeartRadio by Zealot Manufacturing Handforge Podcast for You.
It's hosted by us, Helen Hong, that's me, and Matt Beat.
That's me. The show was conceived and produced by Steve Zamarki, Anthony Savini, and Jason Elliott.
Our editor is Tommy Nickel.
Our researcher is Amelia Polka.
Our production coordinator is Angie Hymes.
And theme music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder.
A special thanks to our iHeartRadio team, Katrina Norvell, Nikki Etor, Ali Cantor, Carrie Lieberman, Will Pearson, Connell Byrne, and Bob Pittman.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified?
Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander. Or we could do something in between, like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So, Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it! Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.